In 6 days, Earthrealm was created. And in 6 days, Earthrealm will be destroyed. And on the 7th day, humanity will rest in peace. Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And I'm pretty sure that is the longest quote I have opened a show with. I had to lock it to do that one. We are here today. We're going back to the arcade once more. We are here today to review what is often considered to be one of the worst martial art movies ever made, a whopping 4% on Rotten Tomatoes, if you care about that sort of thing. Mortal Kombat Annihilation. And joining me once more for this, honestly, truth be told, folks, I think he did the other three episodes just to get to this point. This was the one he wanted to do from the get-go. Joe Day is back with us once more to talk Mortal Kombat Annihilation and defend it a little bit. Joe, are you ready?
I am. Dude, I have been waiting for this moment.
So, just before we got going here for the episode, Joe had mentioned, oh, hey, I just rewatched it just to get it, you know, fresh in my head once more. Joe, this was the first time I've watched this one. So I am coming to this movie with very fresh eyes, knowing all of the, you know, afterwards I looked into all the critiques that are often put forward towards this movie. And I gotta say, so someone coming at it very freshly, I really don't think it's that bad. Maybe this is just me knowing it's supposed to be one of the worst worst martial art movies ever made. Maybe I went into this like when I go see one of the Spider-Man villain Sony movies and I'm like, all right, my expectations are basically at zero. So I don't know if my expectations were so low that it like still did really well, but like I really don't think it's that bad. I would, spoiler for when we get to Mortal Kombat 2021, listeners, at this point, I think I would rank these movies in the order they have come out.
That was, so I, watching it in prep for this was the first time I watched it since 2021 came out. And okay. I came to the same conclusion that I would rank this one above 2021. And it's funny because a lot of the crap that I have heard 2021 get, or that, mm-hmm. that I've heard Annihilation get, is that's exactly what 2021 is guilty of. So I think it's interesting. I've never heard somebody compare this to the rest of the pantheon of martial arts movies. Usually I hear this conversation sit in the realm of video game adaptations. And even for video game adaptations, I really do not think that this movie deserves even an eighth of the crap that it gets. But like martial arts movies, I'll say the controversial take. If you come at this and call this one of the worst martial arts movies, bruh, how many martial arts movies have you watched? Some of those things are painful. Like, yes, I am not nearly the aficionado as some of the folks within the dojo would be, and some of the listeners here would be, and all of that. I'm not nearly as well-versed. But some of those things are painful. And so, yeah, I mean, this is a movie that it became in vogue to crap on it. And we talked about the juggernaut that is the first one. And that really is one of the biggest sins that this movie has to contend with. Is the first one is so frigging good that the bar is already up at the ceiling. However, and I don't know who needs to, actually, I know exactly who needs to hear this. Some of my contemporaries within the pretentious millennial talking head YouTube space. I'm looking at you because I know you all are listening to this show. What you need to hear is this. Sometimes Ready? A movie just needs to be fun. It doesn't need to be The Godfather. You're not watching friggin' Schindler's List. You're not watching the great modern epic of the age. It just needs to be slocky, cornball shit that is just fun to watch. That's it. And one of the things that I think is emblematic, and honestly, I'm not going to let Gen Z go unscathed in this one, because Gen Z jumped on the same train as pretentious millennials did. Here's the thing. I listened to, because I was curious, right? Like, so I went onto YouTube and I looked for a very recent review, because I know sitting in antiquity that this movie is always caught crap. But I went for like, okay, what's a younger audience saying about this? And they're going into all of its fan service, and all of it is bad graphics. And there was a line that the person said in their review that they grew up with Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe. First off, hurt my feelings. Second off, if you look at the time frame of when that one came out, that should give you an idea of the age of the reviewer. Now, we talked about this in other episodes, right? That I am of the vintage. That yes, I was definitely on the younger side when the game first hit and all of that, but the entirety of Mortal Kombat has been coming out since I have been alive. And so when it comes to the movies, like, I was that, like, I was the age range for these movies. And there is something to now, by the time Annihilation came out, I had already known about Super Mario Brothers and that train wreck of a movie. And I grew up on side-scrolling platformers, Sega Genesis, Super Nintendo, like all of the classics, right? Like, that was my era of gaming. And so I was already well aware of what a bad adaptation looked like. And to me, a bad adaptation was something that was embarrassed to actually go far enough to showcase what the games are actually about, right? Like that you only take little things, you slap the label on it, and I didn't know that at the time the word cash grab, but it's just a cash grab, right? But you're too embarrassed to actually give a visual representation on the screen of what was in video game form. No shit, Annihilation is fan service. That's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. Look at the costumes. But it's unafraid. It's unapologetic. Do I wish some of the graphics were that they actually gave the money that this needed, and we actually got more of the particulars and all of this sort of... Yeah, okay, great. Do I wish Shinnok wasn't just a generic wizard-looking dude and all of that? Sure, great. But these are all, like, this movie as a whole, even watching it to today, if the first one was a love letter to the franchise taken seriously, the second one was a love letter to the games. And Mortal Kombat has always had a weird relationship with the storyline, full stop. But the thing to remember about the storyline is by 1997, you're only starting to get into the very first hints of actual storyline progression within Mortal Kombat. And with the full-blown, like, actual story didn't come until, like, PS2 era and all of that. But, like, the first one really only needed to showcase a tournament. And we could sit here and get up our own John Hine parts about whether or not it really did a good job with the tournament and all of that jazz. With this one, it at least tried to give teeth. And it throws all of these names and all of these costumes and gives actual finishing moves to the people that are from the games and all of that sort of jazz. And at some point, we have to ask the question, what are we looking for out of a movie that's a sequel in the Mortal Kombat franchise? And honestly, if the great, I hope the next one's phenomenal. I hope they knock it out of the park and it's all the storyline progression that people want out of it and all of these things. But friends, family, and countrymen, you're not going to get any of that without this stepping stone in the franchise's progression.
So I'm really glad that I just muted my mic and just let him go, folks. So I'm really glad that you started this off with just the pretentious millennial is the problem here. Because, you know, you touched on, I think there's like three big ones that comes up by way of common complaints about this movie. One of those complaints, one thing that is not brought up as a complaint at all, is the fact that most of the cast is recasted for this movie. You have Robin Schoback as Liu Kang, and you have Talisa Soto back as Kitana. Everyone else who was in the first one, who's in this one, recast. Somebody entirely different. And I do have to say, I was a little skeptical at first about this James Remar as Raiden, especially compared to Christopher Lambert from the last one. Honestly, pretty good transition. Pretty good transition between the two. Nobody talks about that at all. One of the big things is the CGI. It's not good. No dip, Sherlock. It's the 90s. We're still, you know, we're still a couple years removed from The Mummy Returns with the awful CGI of The Rock turning into the Scorpion King thing. Like, to me, and this is my way to identify the fact that I am not a pretentious millennial film reviewer, CGI, especially in the 90s, but I would say almost all the way up to like 2010 or so, for the most part should get a free pass, because somebody is going to have to make movies with it that are going to age poorly in order to get to the better CGI. When we get to Justice League and they do an awful job of hiding the fact that Henry Cavill has a mustache and his upper lip looks weird the whole time, that's okay to make fun of. There's a lot of things that are okay to make fun of with the Justice League movies. That is one of them. But like, yeah, does the fight scene with Jax and the giant lizard thing after Sonya Blade has her very unnecessary mud wrestling match, how about that for an actual complaint?
Seriously.
But when Jax is beating up the one lizard thing, yeah, that looks very bad. That looks very bad. But again, it's like, well, somebody, if you want the good stuff now, somebody was going to have to make some pretty crappy looking movies at one point in time. So yeah, to me, CGI, that's irrelevant to this conversation. You know what I mean?
I agree, especially when you look at the other movies coming out at the time. You've got Spawn that also looks terrible.
Oh, God.
But is, again, another movie that's unfairly crapped on. Like, there are so many examples of really solid movies that are just, they're movies out of the 90s.
Yeah, I wish I could agree with you on Spawn, though. Spawn has never worked for me in any form, comic, movie. I've never seen the original HBO cartoon, and that's like the last thing I need to try. But it's a character that I should love that has never, I've yet to find a way to love it. But regardless of that, the other thing that often gets brought up is that the martial art, the fight sequences aren't that good. First off, no, that's wrong. Second, that the movie prioritizes the fighting over the connective tissue of the storyline. And you said this, and I will double down on this because that's, you know, I've got the martial art movie show here. If you had a problem with that in this movie, please don't watch literally any actual kung fu movie from the 70s or 80s, because it is very much fights first, storyline second. You watch these old kung fu movies at the time, and now as a fan 50 years removed, you watch them for the fights. And if you're watching a Mortal Kombat movie, I sure hope you're watching it for the fights. You know what I mean? Like, that's not an argument either. Of like, I mean, it could be a preference. Fine. It could be a preference. You now know not to go watch most kung fu movies made in the 70s. Because movies like Enter the Dragon or Fist of Fury, they're not the norm. A whole complete film that has great story and great fight scenes, not the norm. No. That there's a reason why, many reasons why, those two, for an example, stand out as two of the greatest kung fu movies ever made, because it's more balanced versus what a lot of them are. Fighting first, connective story tissue second. And so know what you're watching. Basically, I think that's the ultimate punchline with Mortal Kombat Annihilation. Know what you're watching. Know what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And there's so if we had a conversation about martial arts movies, it would take you guys, oh, I don't know, probably about a minute and a half to figure out that I do not have the background that Brandon does when it comes to these sorts of movies. I would get exposed very, very quickly. Because it would move past those movies that he just mentioned there. And there's a couple of other ones that can kind of get thrown into that same mix. But there's a reason why guys like Bruce Lee and Jean-Claude Van Damme, and even though he is a complete and total tool, guys like Steven Seagal are part of the conversation that endures, because they tend to be the ones that actually had movies that had more story to them than just fights and things like that. And outside of that, it's fights. It's just cornball nonsense that is the bulk of what you see on the screen. And that's where I'm like, okay, so we grew up, and again, I think you missed something with this movie if you didn't grow up in the era of Mortal Kombat when this was coming out, because you were not going to the video games either for storytelling. You were going for side-scrolling beat 'em ups. That is what these movies or what these games were. And so to see all of these characters against each other, to see Jax versus Mataro, to see Kitana versus Sindel, to see Liu Kang versus Shao Kahn, to see Sonya versus Cyrax. Like, that's the draw of the movie. In an actual Cyrax getup. To see Scorpion versus Sub-Zero. Like, yeah, that is exactly the draw of this movie. And if you stop trying to watch it to be like, I'm going to rank this on my Letterboxd account, piss off. Like, I'm going to give this a score on Rotten Tomatoes. Screw you. Like, just shut up and watch the movie. Like, and I think that's exactly, I think Annihilation is exactly the kind of movie that shows the flaw in the talking head environment of movie criticism. Because if you make it about, let me analyze the story, you've already missed the point.
This is the best time for me to remind everybody that you can follow the show on Letterboxd, Kung Fu Pizza, PRTY, where you can get a review of the movie before the episode comes out, which you would have found out that I actually didn't think this movie was that bad. I loved Jax. Jax was my favorite part of this whole movie, other than the whole, I'm going to get rid of my arms. No, keep those arms on. Keep them on. Yeah. Yeah. But outside of that, I loved Jax, one, because this the guy who played him, let me look him back up. He hasn't had very many acting credits. Lin Williams. Great job. Loved him in this role. Better than I think what's-his-face is going to be in the 2021 movie. But also, I think it was really cool that even though we saw the first one, Jax wasn't in the first one. And so Jax is absolutely clueless. And so in a way, like, Jax is like the embodiment of the casual fan watching this movie. If you are more in this movie from the get-go, producers talked about it. They wanted this one to be more insider baseball. They wanted this one to be for the fans first. Whereas the first one does a really good job, as we talked about, Joe, splitting between fans with a really good on-road for the casual viewer. If you're a casual viewer, Jax is too. That is like Jax's role in this film. And all the time, he's like, why should we be trusting these people? Why are we listening to this guy? What even is going on? Do you like my shiny metal arms? Like, it's just, and I loved him for it. He's got a lot of good fights. He's played really well. That was the one part, though, Joe, that I was like, okay. If you are upset that the storyline clearly is driven more towards you already have an established in your brain Shao Kahn and Sindel and all these other characters, if you're a casual fan, you got nothing of that. I do think they have a rough time introducing everything. We come from the first movie where Kitana is like there. In body. And in the second one, she's the most important person on the planet now. And there's this other woman and this other guy. So I guess this is my way of saying, no, I don't think it's a perfect movie. There was that creative choice made that I think they could have maybe fleshed it out a little bit. I checked this movie before the credits isn't even an hour and a half long. Just a little bit more like expose here or there to kind of flesh things out is really all I'm looking for. Other than that, for me at least, like, no, this movie is not that bad.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I don't. So, again, like you said, it's not a perfect movie. Do I think that animalities needed to be as big of a deal? No, because they're not in the game either. But that's, again, it's a love letter to the games. Mm-hmm. It the first one was a proof of concept that this is a story that could be adapted to the big screen, and Shao Kahn in this one has huge shoes to fill with Shang Tsung from the last one.
Oh yeah,
like you're talking about a character that got redefined by the actor that played him. And so that in and of itself is like a Herculean feat to try to meet that level of gravitas. But if you're looking at it from a game standpoint, yeah, everybody like knows what's there and knows who these people are. And oh, hey, look. Oh, hey, look. Oh, hey, look. But for the casual, like, yeah, okay. If you are trying to make it more attuned to the casual, take out the animality thing. You can still have the scene with Nightwolf and all of that. Don't worry about Jade. Just have the scene between Nightwolf and Liu Kang. And you can make adaptations that present it into something that's a bit more fleshed out and all of that without really going off and rewriting the entirety of the story. Now, originally, Quan Chi was supposed to be in this one. Do I wish that I would have seen Quan Chi in these movies? Yes. Do I think Shinnok, he could have been the inroad to tell more of the story of him being the fallen elder god of death and darkness and all of that sort of stuff? Yes. Do I think it was explicitly necessary to make Raiden and Shao Kahn brothers? No. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. There are critiques along the way, but you're talking about the same level of story-driven criticism that you would apply to the MCU. Think about that for a second. Mm-hmm. Do I think they could have, they needed to do this? No. Do they think that they needed to do that? Yes. Do I think that they could have buttoned this up? Absolutely. That's all within the realm of reasonable criticism. As somebody mm-hmm. who gives a level of commentary and deep analysis mm-hmm. within the horror genre, I think there is a voice for people that want to honestly criticize these movies. Just regurgitating the same set of criticisms to me is not reasonable criticism. It's jumping on the bandwagon and saying something that you know is going to get views on YouTube. It's not like, but again, if you didn't grow up with this movie, if you didn't grow mm-hmm. up with this era of the franchise, I think there's something lost on you when it comes sure. to this movie.
I shared this with you recently. I'm like very slowly inching myself back into buying VHS tapes as I've like seen them in antique stores. These two, I want them on VHS. I want to watch them grainy. I think the good old grainy watch of this, particularly this one, I think it would be really enjoyable. I think you need that atmosphere.
And the reality is, for people that are like, the visuals don't keep up. Okay. Do you really think that in 1997, what people were gearing up for was ultra high definition, bigger than anybody has any right to have televisions in everybody's living room? No. And so at some point we have to accept that there is some media that lives in the era that it belongs in. And if we stop trying to paint everything from the same lens that some of these same pretentious millennials are griping about the state of cinema, but we're going on to our YouTube accounts and our Letterboxd accounts and our Rotten Tomato accounts because we want to be the next Siskel and Ebert, and we're painting everything with the same brush. Friends, you're doing the same exact thing that you're decrying Hollywood doing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, they are. Just enjoy your movies. Seriously,
just like what you like.
Just enjoy it.
Don't be a dick. Like, that's really what it comes mm-hmm. down to.
Yep. And if you agree with that, go check out Systematic Geekology. I think that might be literally the catchphrase. Like what you like and don't be a dick. Thank you. Thank you so much, Joe, not for just making time for this episode, but I think accumulative, we have done like over 2 hours worth of Mortal Kombat content together for this show. So thank you so much for being a part of this. Plug the channel one more time for the listeners.
So if you go over to Thoughts from a Bearded Geek, you'll be able to find horror content. I didn't start off wanting to do that, but it's there. Here we are, and that's where I'm staying. You can also find, if you are into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles content, you can head over to Shell Shock, a TMNT series, also on YouTube, and you'll be able to find Turtles content there.
This has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where we have delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less, served up some wisdom, one slice at a time.